Welcome to Travelitch Radio, the show that lets you scratch your lust for travel from the friendly confines of your home. I'm your host, Dan Schlossberg, along with the lovely and talented Anita Stokes Thomas, my co-host. This is the 320th episode of Travelitch Radio. Every week at 8 Eastern, we bring you inside the world of travel, from hotels and tours to cruise ships, planes, trains, and things you can eat or read on your trip. Listen live on iTunes or blogtalkradio.com, or check out the show later on Facebook on blogtalkradio.com or on my website, danschlossberg.net. Our special guest tonight is Michelle Pecoraro, Executive Director of Plymouth 400. Welcome, Michelle, to Travelitch Radio.
Thank you, Dan.
Hi, Michelle. How long did the voyage of the Mayflower take, and how many people were on board?
Well, the voyage of the original Mayflower in 1620 took 66 days, so that was a pretty long time for people to be in the hold of a ship. 102 of the people on board were passengers, and then there were approximately 30 crew members as well.
And I bet there are lots of animals, too.
Yes, well, there were some animals. There were some goats and some, I believe, some pigs. And then there was there were two dogs, a mastiff and a spaniel. There were a few animals on board and, of course, trunks full of their treasures, things that they needed, and not too much room.
It sounds like it. It wasn't the QE2 or even the Queen Mary.
No,
but
and they
Michelle,
rarely came above decks.
I bet. Didn't the pilgrims on the Mayflower come to Plymouth almost by accident? They were originally headed to the established Virginia colony?
They were headed to what was then Virginia, which was much bigger than what Virginia is now. But it was actually a little bit further north than today's Virginia. So they had to get a new patent from the king after they landed and ended up staying in Plymouth Colony. So that was a whole other process after they had the patent for the Virginia region.
Okay, and correct me if I'm wrong, but they landed in Provincetown first and then moved further south in search of better land and water?
Yes, the first landing, and there are several things on the tip of the Cape, which is now Provincetown, that are called First Landing something, First Landing Park, etc. But that's now modern day Provincetown, the tip of the Cape, and they were there seeking fresh water, which was there, but they didn't find it because they didn't quite know where to look. And they did their wash, and they encountered Native people for the first time at First Encounter Beach, where there was an exchange. No one was hurt, but an exchange of arrows and gunfire.
Hopefully,
well, Michelle,
the gunfire was in the air.
Hopefully, yes. I think they were all warning, you know, each other, hey, we're here and you're here. Don't be stepping on our beach.
Right. Okay. Anita?
Well, speaking of that, why did they choose the name Plymouth Bay?
You know, this is a great question. They actually didn't name Plymouth, even though the Mayflower left from Plymouth, England, and everybody thinks that, well, of course they named this Plymouth because they left from Plymouth. It was actually already named by a previous explorer, and the explorer, John Smith, named the area Plymouth. And when the settlers, when the pilgrims came, they decided the name was appropriate since they had set sail from the port of Plymouth in England.
Hmm. Well, that makes sense. But
it's a great coincidence.
That is quite a coincidence. But now, what's the true story of Plymouth Rock? We hear so many different stories. What's the true story?
Well, that's complicated. But the first documented thing, I know it is, right? The first claim that Plymouth Rock was the landing place of the pilgrims was made by a very old man named Elder Thomas Fonts in 1741, so quite a while after 1620. That was 121 years after the pilgrims arrived in Plymouth. So that was his recollection, and he was told that by his grandfather who was on board, or great grandfather who was on board the Mayflower.
Now, if you're just joining us, we're talking with Michelle Pecoroni, Executive Director of Plymouth 400.
Michelle, let's talk about the Mayflower Compact. Wasn't it the first agreement for self-government in the colonies?
Yes, absolutely. The Mayflower Compact was important because it was the first document that established self-governance in what they called the New World. And it was an active document until 1691, when Plymouth Colony eventually became part of Massachusetts Bay Colony. But the thing about the Mayflower Compact is it is really a precursor to the Massachusetts Constitution and the United States Constitution.
Okay, and since they arrived in December of 1620, why is Thanksgiving celebrated in November? Is it because of the successful fall harvest they had a year later?
Yes, the event that Americans commonly call the first Thanksgiving was celebrated by the Pilgrims after their first harvest, which you are absolutely correct, Dan, was in 1621, October of 1621. And the feast, the account of the feast is that it lasted 3 days, and Edward Winslow wrote that it was attended by 90 Native Americans and 53 Pilgrims. And so when Lincoln first issued his proclamation for making Thanksgiving a national holiday, he used the icons of this first Thanksgiving to really bring the country back together in the aftermath of the Civil War.
Okay, I have to ask you a question here. Wait, I got to ask you a question about Lincoln, what you just said.
Yes.
The aftermath of the Civil War, Lincoln was assassinated before the Civil War ended.
Well, because of the division in the country, I'm sorry, during the Civil War, he decided to create Thanksgiving as a way to bring people, to demonstrate that people could get along, that they could come back together.
Okay.
And you know what else is really cool about that? Is that he was influenced by a woman named Sarah Josepha Hale. She was the editor of Godey's Ladies' Book, which was a popular magazine for women in that era. And she was the one that gave him the idea to do it, and she was pretty persistent about it, too.
Oh, good. Nita?
Yeah, I have a question. How did the Pilgrims survive the New England winter? I mean, I know it gets cold over, you know, where they originated, but how were they able to, how were they able to kind of handle that? And then another question also, too, how were they able to connect with the Native Americans who already lived there?
Well, so the Pilgrims did have a very difficult time surviving the first winter. In fact, half of them did not survive it. Over 50 of them perished that first winter. So it was very difficult. The pilgrims ferried their supplies to land, and then they began building a common house so that they could at least get some shelter up and store their food. But not everybody could fit in that shelter, and so not everybody was able to get off the ship. So they were in the harbor. And as the weather got worse, and exposure and infection, you know, just started to take their toll. And by spring of 1621, half of the passengers had perished.
Yeah, I have a sort of a follow-up question to that. How did they decide who would be able to go into the shelter? How did they decide that?
Well, it may have, we don't really know, but it may have been just, you know, whoever was the sickest went into the shelter, or vice versa. They probably wanted to separate the people who were very sick from people who were not that sick yet or sick at all. So I would guess that would be the way that they would decide, but I don't, that's not really recorded anywhere that I know of.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's very interesting, though. Sure, those were tough decisions to make.
Absolutely. Absolutely, they were. And you had also asked me about how they might have met up with the Native Americans. And there is it is recorded that not that very first winter, but into the spring, they were approached by a Native American named Squanto. And Squanto was able to speak English. And it's very interesting that nobody ever talks about how he learned English. But the fact is that Squanto was kidnapped and sold into slavery in Europe. And so he was gone for about 5 years. And when he came back, his village had been wiped out. Patuxet, which is now Plymouth, had been wiped out by plague. So he wasn't able to find any of his relatives. So he had to make his way in this new world, and he was a stranger to many other tribal people. So when the English came, he watched them for a while, and then he approached them speaking English, saying hello to them. And so that's how they first encountered Squanto, and he brokered their relationship with the other native people in the area. So he was able to bridge, you know, the gap of the loss that he, you know, had, you know, with by bridging the gap between these two cultures.
Mm-hmm. That's very interesting. I hadn't heard that story, but now
I know a lot of people don't.
Yeah, that's quite fascinating. Now, next year, 2020, marks the 400th anniversary, when it actually is, of the arrival of the Mayflower and the founding of Plymouth Colony. But your programming has already started. So why don't you tell us a little bit about what's happening and also, too, what you have coming up?
Absolutely. So we have had, well, first of all, you know, this is our announcement time, our announcement year. So we've had several media events that have allowed us to get the word out. We work very closely and have been the last several years with the tourism industry as well, so that tour operators and agents, et cetera, will know what's going on, so they can help their visitors or our visitors decide, you know, what they want to do and see while they're here for the 400th anniversary. So that's the kind of work we're doing up front. We do have one event that we do each year, and we do it with the UK, and it is called Illuminate Thanksgiving. And it's all about giving thanks and giving back community and your country and your world. And we share that event currently with, as I mentioned, with Plymouth, UK. We also are going to be including Leiden in the Netherlands this year, and several other communities around the country and around the world that will do this lighted ceremony, candle lighting ceremony on the eve of Thanksgiving. So That's something that we have been doing and will do in a much bigger way in 2020. And that happens over the weekend before Thanksgiving currently.
Mm-hmm. And we're talking with Michelle Pecoraro, Executive Director of Plymouth 400.
And Michelle, you worked for the Cape Cod Chamber of Commerce for a long time. Is Plymouth part of Cape
uh-huh.
Cod? Please tell our listeners exactly where you are geographically.
Well, many people would argue that Plymouth is part of Cape Cod, those who aren't from here, but around here, Plymouth is not part of Cape Cod, but we are located in a very sweet spot right between Boston and Cape Cod. So there are two bridges that bring people over to the beautiful Cape Cod, and Plymouth is right before those two bridges. So it's the whole landmass before the bridges. So it's in a wonderful location because we are so centrally located to Boston and to the Cape that you could get to the tip of the Cape from Plymouth in about an hour and a half or less, and you can get to Boston in about 45 minutes.
Oh, that's terrific. Well, I know several groups are planning special events, so please tell us what Plymouth 400 is doing to mark the 2020 anniversary of the Mayflower.
Sure. We have a lot going on. We actually have 7 signature events and programs. They're the signature events of the 400th anniversary. And those start with an opening ceremony on April 24th, 2020, which is located, that will be located in Plymouth and in and around Plymouth. The main ceremony will be in a place called Memorial Hall, but then there'll be things going on throughout the town. Our next event is going to be the official maritime salute to the 400th anniversary, and that is June 27th and 28th, 2020. And, of course, the Mayflower will be in her berth, and we will have some tall ships and some working boats and a beautiful maritime festival in Plymouth Harbor. And that, as I mentioned, is June 27 and 28 in 2020. We have a Wampanoag Ancestors Walk. So for the first time, Wampanoag people have the ability to tell their story in their own voice. And so we're excited about, in addition to the pilgrim story and, you know, all of the virtues of our pilgrim forefathers, we are also talking about the contributions of the Wampanoag people. So in August, August 1st of 2020, we have a Wampanoag Ancestors Walk that's also located in Plymouth, and that will be a procession where the 69 villages of the Wampanoag Nation will be represented, and they will bless the certain spots throughout the town where their ancestors once walked. The next thing we have is it's September 14th, and this is in Boston, and it's at the Massachusetts State House, and it's the State House salute to the 400th anniversary, and that will include a procession of people, descendants of the Pilgrims, many different family lineage organizations, the largest of which is the General Society of Mayflower Descendants. So they will there'll be a gathering of Mayflower descendants. There'll be a procession up the Boston Common and into the State House, where the actual Bradford Journal will be displayed, open to the page where the Mayflower Compact is recorded. The next event is Embarkation Festival. It is a multicultural, multi-day cultural festival, and that's September 19th and 20th. And this is where we commemorate and celebrate the waves of immigrants that came after the Pilgrims. The Pilgrims were the first colony formed by women and by families with where men brought their women and children with them. And so we look at them as the first immigrants because they did what all of our families have done. They left where they were so that they could give their family a better life. And so we're celebrating all the many waves of immigrants that came through this embarkation festival, September 19th and 20th in 2020. We have an Indigenous History Conference. So here's one of our academic events, and that is October 30th through November 1st. And that is taking place at Bridgewater State University here in Massachusetts. And so there will be panels and workshops and discussions for those days about Native culture, colonization, and what is happening in modern days with Native people. And then finally, we have our Thanksgiving events, which includes an event that takes place every year in Plymouth, which is the Thanksgiving Parade, which is the highlight of the weekend before Thanksgiving here in Plymouth each year. We have partnered with them, and we have concerts going on and a parade on November 20th and 21st. We have our Illuminate Thanksgiving is also part of that full-on week of events, and that's going to take place on Wednesday, November 25th, the evening before Thanksgiving. And in between, we have several events and programs going on throughout the town on Monday and Tuesday night. So that's going to be a very fun and festive time and culminating our year of 2020.
Okay, I want to tell our listeners.
Yeah.
Okay, I want to tell our listeners, you're listening to Travel Itch Radio with Dan Schlossberg and Anita Stokes-Thomas. Find the archive show on blogtalkradio.com or check out Travel Itch Radio on Facebook. We're also on iTunes. Michelle, I know your area has trolley tours, museums, cranberries, beaches, spas, and even cultural and historical districts. Can you give us the Reader's Digest version?
Yes, all of the above. So, yes, we have tours of the area. We have tours of the town of Plymouth. All the towns on the Cape have walking tours, trolley tours, ghost tours, history tours. So there's no shortage of finding out more about the history here. There are lots and lots of authentic places. There are museums that represent everything from agriculture to history to art. Cranberries are, you know, our fall foliage is cranberry harvest time. So it's doubly beautiful because we not only get the beautiful colors in the trees, but all around the edge of the cranberry bog, those beautiful trees are reflected in the cranberry bog where you see beautiful bright red berries. When it's a blue sky day, there is nothing prettier than a cranberry bog in September and October. So, yes, we have all of those things. And like I said, many different cultural and historic districts throughout this whole region.
Okay. What is Plymouth Plantation?
Yeah. So Plymouth Plantation is a living history museum that represents the original Plymouth colony. So the whole Plymouth colony, the village of the colony, is reproduced at Plymouth Plantation. You can go in and out of the different houses. You can speak to costumed interpreters who will speak to you as if they're in the 17th century. It's a really fun place to visit. And then and on the other side of the plantation is the native home site, the Wampanoag home site. And at that location, you can also speak to interpreters in their traditional dress, but they will talk to you from the current perspective, the 21st century perspective, so that they can tell you all about their history and from 1620, from before 1620, and leading up to today, and what the tribes do today.
Anita?
I was just wondering, how do people get to Plymouth? Is there any public transportation, even by boat, and can drivers find a place to park?
Yes, there is public train and bus transportation to the area from Boston. Most people will land at Logan Airport. And so the transportation is pretty easy out of Boston. Or people rent a car at the airport and drive, or people also just drive in, you know, from nearby. But they can park at their hotel, and some hotels provide shuttles so that they don't have to drive after they've parked at the hotel. We also have shuttle parking planned specifically for some of these major events in 2020. So there'll be off-site shuttle parking where you can park your car and shuttle in and hop on a shuttle in and out of the event. So there are those provisions. We also have some smaller airports around the area. Plymouth has an airport. Hyannis has an airport. So those people who like to fly their private planes in, that's another way people can get here, and it's very convenient.
Well, is midweek the best time to visit? And how far in advance should visitors start planning for their reservations for accommodations?
Well, really, now is the time to book into hotels. Hotels are already getting quite a lot of bookings. So if you want to be close in the town of Plymouth, this is the time to start. You know, and you don't have to stay right in Plymouth. There are many, many hotels on Cape Cod, a beautiful place to stay as well, and it is not that far from the center of the Cape to drive up to Plymouth. It's about 30 minutes, so that's a possibility as well. Of course, there's Boston and the South Shore, which which there are several hotels in that area. If you want to be closer to Boston, that's, I would suggest staying up in that area. But it is time to consider where you're going to stay and when you're going to come so that you can book in to these hotels. Also, most of the events fall on weekends, but not all of them. But so, you know, you can come in on a weekday and then stay through the weekend for these events that are going to be going on.
Michelle, does your area have historic inns or restaurants that will accentuate the Plymouth 400 anniversary?
Yes, yes, there are many inns and bed and breakfasts throughout the area and the region. So there are several in Plymouth proper, but all around us there are bed and breakfasts, and on the Cape there are some very, very beautiful B&Bs and inns. So we are very much a New England, experience here in Massachusetts, and certainly on Cape Cod and in Plymouth. It's really a beautiful area, and the accommodations are, if you like historic accommodations, we have a lot of that.
Well, I'm excited for all of the things that you are saying will happen. So how can our listeners learn more about Plymouth 400 and Mayflower 400?
Plymouth 400, we have a website. It's www.plymouth400inc.org. And that website is, we are launching our new website at the end of this month. So stay tuned, because that's when you'll see additional events to the signature events. Will be on that calendar. So in addition to the events that Plymouth 400 is doing, there are sanctioned events throughout the state. And so you'll see a full-on calendar of what's going on. You can make your choices from the whole year. So that's the best way to learn about Plymouth 400. Mayflower 400 in the UK also has a website. And they have information on our site, and they will have information on our site at the end of this month, and we also have information on their current site. So we do share a lot of what we're doing.
Okay, and I want to mention your website is a great list of Plymouth trivia: the oldest lighthouse, oldest men's club, oldest church, oldest courthouse, first iron shovels in the colonies, and the ship used in the Boston Tea Party all had their origins in Plymouth, plus a personal favorite, the very first Toll House cookie. And I want to mention, as a baseball fan, I'd like to point out the first catcher's mitt was created in Plymouth in 1875. Unfortunately, we're out of time, Michelle Pecoraro, but thank you so much. You are the executive director of Plymouth 400, and you've got your work cut out for you, but it sounds like a lot of fun. So thank you for being on Travel It Radio tonight.
Well, thank you, Dan. Thank you very much. And I appreciate both of you having me on tonight.
Okay, thanks a lot. And listeners,
thank
with Mother's you. Day, Father's Day, and graduation day coming up soon, why not please that baseball fan in your life with my book, The New Baseball Bible. It is a 424-page offbeat baseball history containing many items and illustrations never published before previously. Get it on Amazon.com or at major bookstores. And that's it for this edition of Travel It Radio. Tune in again next week, same time, same station, when we're going to be talking about books that you can find at your bedside in hotels, a very special show. Watch our Facebook page for more information. Now, this is Dan Schlossberg, along with Anita Stokes-Thomas, and our special guest, Michelle Pecoraro, saying thank you for your time this time. Until next time, good night.